from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren joins us on the program. We'll talk with her about her recently announced plans to help student borrowers and about why she believes that the government has abandoned the middle class. Then in the bottom half of the hour, infusing blood from young mice into older ones reverse signs of aging, according to three studies published on Sunday. The injected mice showed improved memory, muscle tone, and endurance, among other effects, and the findings have potential implications for Alzheimer's and dementia patients, and plans are already in the works to start clinical trials for humans. We'll discuss the findings of the studies, which were conducted by researchers at UCSF, Stanford, and Harvard. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren joins us in this segment of Forum. She was elected to the United States segment in 2012 and is the author of the book, U.S. Senate in 2012, and she's the author of the book, A Fighting Chance. That's her 10th book, and she also worked as an assistant to President Barack Obama and worked to set up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and joins us, and we welcome you to the program. Glad to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. It's there's no dearth of things certainly to talk with you about, but I want to get right to the article of yours that appeared the 1st of May in the New York Times. It says, What Happened to the Middle Class? And get to it because you raise what I think for listeners are vital issues. That is, you say the way to get back the middle class, which is hollowing out, is to go back to America back after the Great Depression, put more cops on the beat, monitoring financial markets and passing basic safety rules to temper boom and bust, and also build a future for our children as a priority, education and infrastructure. But at the end, you say we got to change how Washington works. And the headline here is the game is rigged. So you've been a couple years in the Senate now. Give us some thoughts about what you have to do to change the system or make Washington work.
Well, you know, that's the really amazing thing. And I talk about this a lot in the book about it's a firsthand account, an eyewitness account of what Washington has been like. And it's been about my fights from the outside and seeing a game that is increasingly rigged. Washington works really well for those who can hire armies of lobbyists and lawyers. For regular American families, not so much. And that has created a tilt in the playing field, and every year the tilt gets worse. So I look at this a couple of ways. One is we're seeing the influence of concentrated money and power taking care of itself in Washington. That means we got to balance it out on the other side. And what have we got on the other side? We got votes and voices. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. But we've got to use them. The other thing we're going to have to talk about is we're going to have to talk about money in politics. And we're going to have to talk about making change on money in politics. Otherwise, we truly are going to be a country where the rich get richer and everybody else falls behind. That's not the America I grew up in. That's not the America I want to see for my grandchildren. And I'm willing to fight for an America that really does.
Well, you're getting
a fighting chance.
You're getting a lot of praise for that position. However, you've been pushed a little bit by people like George Stephanopoulos about what ought to be, from their perspective, perhaps, or from the perspective of many others, criticism of those in the running of your own party. I'm talking, of course, about Senator Clinton, but also about President Obama in terms of coziness with Wall Street.
Yeah, well, and I make no secret about my differences with the administration. You know, I make it clear in the book, the way I see this is that the Treasury Department, both under President Bush and under President Obama, paid far too much attention to how to protect the biggest financial institutions in this country, and that we're still paying the price for that. And that they didn't pay enough attention to what was happening on the ground to American families. And so this economy got rebuilt sort of at the top, but not in the rest of the economy. And I think that creates a real problem. And I think we have to hold our government accountable as well as holding the big financial institutions accountable. I think that's really important.
What about naming names, though? David Lauder reviewed your book in the Los Angeles Times. The book, again, is A Fighting Chance. It's the 10th book written by Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's with us by phone this morning. And he said, well, you criticized the president's team, but when it comes to somebody like Tim Geithner, who was a Secretary of Treasury, the only thing you say about him is that he didn't have a seatbelt on once when he was in a car with you. In other words, there seems to be a reluctance on your part, at least according to Mr. Lauder, to really come out and name names and point fingers.
Well, you know, I kind of would say to him, you need to go back and read some more of that book. In fact, one of the passages in the book that certainly hits me the hardest is the one about I was asked to go to Washington right at the height of the crisis in 2008, basically to try to bring some accountability to the TARP bailout. And so we kept meeting with Treasury. We had no real authority and tools, heavy-duty tools, but we got in there and started writing reports, started being very public about our criticism. And I have a long description in the book about meeting with Secretary Geithner, and he was talking on and on and on about the financial system and what their plans were and kind of the sort of thing, you know, where nobody gets a chance to interrupt. And finally, I just couldn't stand it anymore, and I jumped in and said, what about the millions of families who are losing their homes in foreclosure? The response to it has been anemic at best, pathetic. It's just a very, very weak response. And Secretary Geithner looked back at me and said, no, he said, we're getting the right amount of response to the mortgage crisis, the foreclosures, because we've got just the right number to foam the runway for the big financial institutions. In other words, and I talk about this in the book, the way he saw dealing with mortgage foreclosures was getting the right response so that the profitability of the banks would be insured. That is, not too many and not too few, to make sure the banks still do all right, with no focus on what that meant for the millions of families who had signed mortgages, who got cheated, who got tricked, who got trapped, some who did some bad things themselves. But no sense of what that meant to those families, what it meant to their communities, what it meant to America's middle class to have 6 million people go through mortgage foreclosures.
Was Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson under the Bush administration better along those lines from your perspective? Because we had him on the air here and he was talking about, at least rhetorically, about the same things you just touched on.
No, he was not better. In fact, he did even less, if that's possible. He was not out there advancing a program that did much of anything to try to help people who were in foreclosure and wouldn't meet with the oversight panel, as I talk about in the book. This is really one of the keys about what happened in the financial crisis. I just go back for a minute. You go back and look at the savings and loan crisis that happened right at the end of the 80s in the early 90s. Nearly 900 people ended up going to jail over that. People who ran savings and loans and other financial institutions that didn't follow the rules. And boy, there was some real accountability. Roll the clock forward to 2008, 20 years later, and nobody ended up going to jail. Not only did they not end up going to jail, no serious investigations. Not only that, it was a bailout that said, how can we protect your jobs? How do we protect your profitability to the largest financial institutions? And here's what really gets me about it. That's how Too Big to Fail was created. Today we live in a world where the five largest financial institutions, the ones that back in 2008, we were all told, the public was told, were too big to fail, are now 38% bigger than they were at the time of the crash. So,
with, forgive me, lots of nice raises for some who are, lots of nice raises for some who should be in jail.
You bet. They did really, really well. And no real accountability for the largest financial institutions. At the same time, families are still struggling. Millions of people lost their homes. Millions of people were put out of work. Millions of people took a big hit to their retirement accounts. And we've now got young people who have done what we wanted them to do. They went to college. They graduate into a sluggish economy that's not creating opportunities for them. And at the same time, that has burdened them with huge amounts of student loan debt. So, you know, you just look at the facts, look at where everybody is, and you understand that that's what Washington policy has done. It has protected the richest and most powerful. It has made them richer and more powerful. But it has left Americans behind, American families, America's working families, America's middle class.
Talking with Senator Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, author of A Fighting Chance. I want to get into your student loan legislation. I want to give an opportunity also to listeners to talk with you with a little time we have with you. And I'm prompted to ask you, how likely, if what you're describing here, is it that we'll get much of an agenda through given the gridlock?
Well, you know, my view on this, you don't get what you don't fight for. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to stand up and fight. And if people want to vote no, then fine. Vote no, but go back and tell the people in your home states why you voted no. So I'll do that one on student loans. I just introduced a bill yesterday along with more than two dozen other Democratic senators. And the bill says for the 40 million people out there who have student loans outstanding at 7%, 8%, 9%, 10%, and even higher, you can refinance your student loans down to the rate that is currently being offered by the federal government to new borrowers. So a new undergraduate borrower, for example, pays 3.86% this year. The idea is homeowners refinance their mortgages when interest rates are low. Small businesses refinance their loans. Municipalities refinance their loans. But students who have federal loans can't refinance down to today's rate. And this bill proposes that they do that. And just to underline how difficult this is, students out there are struggling with $1.2 trillion in outstanding student loan debt. And the student loan debt is at an interest rate that is producing tens of billions of dollars in profits for the United States government. Just the loans from 2007 to 2012, just that narrow slice of loans, is predicted to make $66 billion in profit for the federal government. In other words, right now, if your mom and dad can, you know, write a check and send you to college, you're fine. You'll pay one price. But if you've got to borrow the money to go to college, you pay not just the administrative costs, the bad debt costs, the cost of the funds. You pay double that, triple that, sometimes even more than that, in order to produce billions of dollars in revenues for the federal government. Now, why does that happen? I'll tell you why it happens. It happens because students and their families don't have an army of lobbyists here in Washington to watch out for them. So the game gets rigged the other direction. Plenty of protections for those at the top, not for those who are trying to get an education, to have a fair shot at making it in this economy.
Student loan debt actually exceeds credit card debt, just to give some people an idea of the kind of staggering amount we're talking about. But, you know, Slate magazine talked about your legislation, your proposed legislation on student loans, and said, it's political theater, the GOP will vote it down.
You know, I just am not going for that kind of cynicism, because let's keep in mind, these are exactly the interest rates. They're deliberately picked in this statute that the nearly every Republican in both the House and the Senate voted for last July on new interest, new student loans that were put out. So they've already said those are the right interest rates to charge our kids who are trying to get an education. All we're doing here is saying, why not for all of our kids who tried to get an education? It's the same deal across the board. This is something the Republicans have already voted for in principle. If they want to explain why we should make billions of dollars in profits off the backs of people who are out there struggling to deal with student loans, then let them explain it. But they have voted for these interest rates for the new students who are taking out new loans. it should be available to everyone right now. The U.S. government should not be making profits off the backs of our kids.
But are you also proposing, Senator, a tax on millionaires, the so-called Buffett rule in this as well? Is that part of your legislation?
We have to have a way to pay for it because, and think about why we have to pay for it. The U.S. government has already baked in the billions of dollars in profits off the student loan into budgets in the years going forward. So what we propose in this bill is the Buffett rule. It says that billionaires have to pay at least as much in taxes as their secretaries do, and that every dollar brought in from the Buffett rule will be used to bring down the interest rate on student loans.
Look, and you're going to shame Republicans to vote for that?
Well, there's the choice. I don't know how to make the choice any clearer. America can invest in billionaires, or America can invest in students. You know, this is really why I wrote the book, why I wrote A Fighting Chance. It's about who this country works for. This is a personal story for me. I went to a commuter college that cost $50 a semester. I am deeply grateful to an America that was investing in young people and said, if you're going to work hard and try to get an education, we'll make sure there's an affordable option for you. I want that same kind of fighting chance for our kids today, and I don't know any way to get it except to put it out there and say, let's vote on it, and then let's go home and tell the voters how we voted.
Talking with Elizabeth Warren, Senator from Massachusetts, author of A Fighting Chance. I want to give listeners a fighting chance to talk to Elizabeth Warren. If you'd like to join us, our toll-free number is available. She'll be with us until the half hour. You can join us now. 866-733-6786 is the number to call, and whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, that's the number to go to. 866-733-6786, or email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can also tweet us, our Twitter handle, at @KQEDForum. I'll ask you just very quickly, and then we'll bring our calls in here, Senator Warren, a question which is on people's minds. Still not running for president?
No, I am not running for president.
Okay. And we'll go to our callers. Actually, one more thing before I go to our callers.
Sure.
Just quickly, if you would. A lot was made when you did run for Senate about actually going back historically to saying you were of Native American ancestry, and there was all kinds of outrage about that. And some wag called you Pocahontas in the Boston papers. There's no proof that you were. There's no proof that you aren't. Where do you stand on this now?
Yeah, I talk about this in the book, that I'm like a lot of kids. I learned who I am from my mom and my dad. We know what my brothers and I know who we are from that. But I never tried to claim any advantage from it, never tried to claim any special thing in college or anything in my jobs. And everybody who hired me for a job made that clear that they didn't even know about it. So, you know, at the end of the day, I am who I am, and that's it.
And we'll go to a caller from Albany, Georgia. Robbie joins us. We're going to Malcolm in San Bruno first. Malcolm, hi.
Hi. First, Senator Warren, I'd like to say that I admire the work you do, and I wish we had more people like you in government.
Thank you, Malcolm.
So among the 200 questions I'd like to ask you, why is there no minimum corporate tax in America? Why do trucking companies get hundreds of millions of dollars back, and companies like GE pay no effective tax? It's actually a negative effective tax. Well, how come that is allowed to continue? Thank you.
Boy, Malcolm, I'm with you. I talk about this in the book, how we can live in an America where the U.S. government makes profits off the backs of kids who are trying to get an education, and yet turns around and says to Fortune 500 companies, they can be profitable and still pay nothing in taxes because there are so many loopholes built into the system.
Senator, it's lobbying, isn't it, really?
I was just going to say, it comes down to lobbying. That's how the game is rigged. That's how the playing field is tilted. Those big corporations have armies of lobbyists to represent them. Working families, not so much. And that tilt has gotten worse and worse and worse over the last 25 years. This has really been my life's work. This book is just one more book in the series that I've talked about what's happening to America's middle class. We have got to fight back. We are reaching a tipping point. America's middle class is it's losing its foundations. It's starting to crumble. if Washington stays on this path, we will fundamentally change as a country. That's why I'm fighting back.
And let me thank Malcolm for the call and go to the caller in Albany, Georgia. Robbie, welcome. You're on Forum. Good morning.
All right. Good morning. And I want to thank Miss Elizabeth as well for taking our calls and taking our time to talk to people.
I like a Georgia caller referring to her as Miss Elizabeth. That's the old Southern way. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I did want to bring up a question that I have tried to bring up a couple of times with our state senators, but it's a little harder to get a hold of people with just an email or a letter. I would like to ask you what your opinion is on entitlement reform and why we have it currently set up where a family of three that makes $50,000 a year currently has a lower quality of living than a family of eight that makes $20,000 a year.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you asked the right question when you ask about entitlement reform. But I want to be clear on entitlement reform, that when we talk about it, we need to talk across the whole spectrum. You know, Malcolm's point when he talks about not just the tax loopholes, but the subsidies that go to big corporations. You know, by what system? Who would think it is fair to say that the oil companies, for example, made more than $170 billion in profits, the big five did last year, and yet still sucked down billions of dollars in subsidies from the U.S. government. In fact, I'll just do one quick reminder on the math. You remember when we were all talking about the sequester hanging out there last year, how it was cutting Head Start, it was cutting Meals on Wheels, it was cutting medical research, NIH. Always keep in mind on that, it didn't cut the subsidies that went to the biggest and most powerful in this country. All of those who got their tax breaks and their special deals, they still got them at 100 cents on the dollar. Those cuts were all aimed toward working families and toward families that are struggling, toward families who are trying to feed their kids. Do we get it right in terms of every dial between this family and that family? Certainly not. And there are ways we could do a better job. But when I talk about entitlement reform, I want to talk about where the big dollars are going. They're going out the door to those who've already made it and who want to make sure that Washington keeps working for them.
And let me thank Robbie for his call. I want to give you a little bit of love that's coming through here from Twitter. Here's a tweet that says, Senator Warren, thank you. You are the new lion of the Senate. Noelle writes on Twitter, glad she hasn't sold out to Washington and still saying it like it is. Keep it up in D.C. Thanks. And Ayo says, three cheers for this clear voice of reason, but does Senator Warren have many or any allies in Washington for this fight? And a kind of related question by Dave, who says, I know you can't win, but you could push Hillary to the left. You're the first genuine voice since Wellstone. So along those lines, can you talk about your allies and what you might be able to, well, what sort of influence you might have on Hillary Clinton if indeed she is a candidate to move toward more of the progressive ideas that you represent?
So let's do talk about allies. That bill that we introduced yesterday on student loans I already have 27 co-sponsors on it in the Democratic Party. And it's people in all kinds of places from all around the country. Mark Begich from Alaska, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin. A lot of terrific people who are part of this. And in my view, that's the best way we move forward. We've got our issue on the table, student loans. We're going to get out there and fight for it. We need every senator who is part of that to get a little love from people. They need to hear from people. This is good. I'm glad you're in on this. Because, as I said earlier, all we got at the end of the day is we've got our voices and we've got our votes.
Well, you're stirring it up.
And we've got to band together and make them work.
Thank you, Senator Warren. The book, again, is A Fighting Chance. Senator Elizabeth Warren, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael.
When we return, we're going to talk about, injecting young blood into old blood, in mice at least. I'm Michael Krasny.